tonight is a DIY satsang. I have nothing to teach because nothing is the teaching. The nothing that is the zero point that underlies all that appears and is the intelligence that directs and manifests as all that unfolds. All is consciousness. All is presence. There are no egos. There are no separate beings. There is only absolute reality. The zero appearing as the infinite. But if there are questions, tonight is a good time to ask them so that you can abide in total clarity as to who you are and as to the nature of the practice required to attain the supreme reality. All of it has already been taught, but if there is still any ambiguity, confusion, or doubt, please don't be inhibited, because there are no excuses for not being in total self-realization right now. Unless you have chosen not to be. If there is still clinging to the unreality of the ego and its baggage of attachments, fears, desires, narratives, its sense of lack, its sense of separation from the God Self, and all of its illusions of Maya, its karma, and its primary impurity of identifying consciousness with form, then this is the time to release such errors of understanding. So that the willpower to attain and abide in the Supreme Self is not blocked by any internal beliefs or barriers of illusion. So please go to the mic if you have a question, and if there's anyone on the Zoom line, I hope they also feel free to ask any questions.
Okay, any question from Alan. Well, she's not sure if it's a question, but she said she was thinking about us the entire day and received the email and reacted with joy. But the day was spent in that feeling of impending doom. But there was no doom part for the first time. I have identified two challenges left to my ego during this time. Do I just walk away, or do I confront them? I don't know.
The illusion is that there's an I to make a choice between walking away and confronting. That I is exactly the false concept and complex that acts as the barrier to the will of God acting directly without any distortion. So the solution must be the release of the narrative of there being some choice between one thing to do or another, because the self does nothing. The self is pure presence. And what happens to the vehicle is none of the business of the self. It all happens through the will of that perfection of conscious intelligence that unfolds the apparent reality of time and space in a way that will bring about the ultimate benevolent outcome and culmination in the return, the complete return of every node of consciousness to the zero point. And that revelation and redemption happens spontaneously, but happens immediately when there is full surrender to the stillness of the presence of that luminous, all-pervading, all-powerful self that you are. Simply let go of any sense of being a person in a world, and all that is true and beautiful will be revealed.
In the last couple of days, I came across a story of a mathematician who, when he was in his early years, came across a puzzle that had never been solved. And he worked on it for a long time into his older age. And he was speaking about the release that happened when he finally solved the puzzle. And I was thinking about my own consciousness as a puzzle to be solved. And yet at the same time, I recognized that in practice, not getting caught up in a narrative or trying to do something is important also. So as I was meditating the last couple of days, I've been thinking particularly about this idea that you mentioned on Wednesday night, that the mirror is simultaneously a reflection, it has an object, but the mirror sees also. And so I wonder, this kind of release, let's say, that the mathematician got from solving the problem, is it accurate to try to bring together that point where the mirror that sees and the mirror that also contains the object are one? Like, is that turning this into something that's more complicated than what it really is?
That part is correct. You see, the mirror is perfect stillness. Mm-hmm. And all that appears in the mirror is simply a reflection of the symbolic truth that unfolds in the apparent movement of space and time. And all of that can be mathematically graphed and languaged as a system of thought. But every system of thought has its own puzzles, and some of them cannot be solved because thought always reaches a point of failure. And so when you understand that the ego itself is a complex, a system of thought, it is the puzzle. And the puzzle cannot be solved so long as there is identification with the image in the mirror, which is the body in an apparent world. And it's the stillness of mind that brings the supreme intelligence that solves all puzzles and brings everything to ultimate simplicity.
I guess I always come to a point where I think of it in terms of practice and that idea of there not being anything to do other than be still makes it seem like there's absolutely nothing that I can do and I shouldn't do anything until it is resolved, and yet it's that feeling of trying to resolve it that's...
That narrative itself is an illusion. When you ask whose narrative is it, it's just the mirror itself, and the language is simply a spewing of imagination, but it has no reality. It's the silence that contains the power of presence and of the Sat-Chit Ananda. So there is no doer, and there is no thinker. All of that is part of the illusion. Everything has already happened and nothing has ever happened because only the changeless is real, the mirror itself, not the images that move about on it. And when you are fully absorbed into the light of the mirror and its crystalline purity and clarity, then even the images disappear. And there is only that which is forever unmanifest.
I've just wanted to ask for clarification on, like, an answer that you gave to a question I asked recently about, and your response was that that the sanskaras aren't at the soul level, and they're at the level of the ego.
But the subconscious ego, usually. The sanskaras are not conscious. The conscious mind is the effect of the sanskaras. They are qualium wave functions that are very subtle, that cannot be directly perceived. Only their effect, which is that of mental chatter or somatic symptoms or karma or some other unfoldment of an event of suffering or a pattern, a habitual pattern that repeats, that brings about a sense of self-defeat and of stuckness within the false. All of those are the sanskaras. They are the effect of them. But what dissolves the sanskara is the stillness, because the sanskara must feed on its ability to produce thoughts and then feeds off the emotional reaction that the body and the consciousness of the ego complex has to those thoughts and projections, and taking them for a reality becomes very serious and involved and obsessed with trying to solve problems that don't really exist. So when the stillness supervenes, the sanskaras dissipate. And if you stay in the silence and realize that's your true nature, they disappear forever.
Did the sanskaras like originate, like did they come from the karma within the life, or did they come along with the soul, like at the beginning as a potentiality?
Some of them came with the soul left over from previous lifetimes, in which there were incomplete gestalts, desires that were not able to be fulfilled, or fears that were kept alive, or a sense of despair, or a sense of attachment and need, etc. But then, built on those are the projections of the parents in during the intrauterine and infantile states, and their demands, fantasies about you, their system of relating, all of those then become an additional layer of sediment of sanskaras. But when the top layer is removed, then the more subtle ones come, and those are the ones that are responsible for the ongoing sense of personal existence, because it's a continuation from the sutratma, from the soul's periodical punctuation of its journey with a different kind of life experience that can produce alterations in those sanskaras. So the stillness eliminates all of those idiosyncrasies of tendency and preconception until the slate is completely clear and the purity of the God Self is fully revealed.
Thank you.
Hello. Okay, I feel I have a few parts to my question. Firstly, what triggered it is a reaction I had when you said the impurity of identifying with form. So that gave me a little trigger, because obviously I...
What did it trigger?
I guess guilt, or like some kind of feeling of, you know, we're being told off for being identifying with form. So, but that kind of led me to something I was thinking about this week. I rewatched Hamlet last weekend, the one that we watched here. And I get so excited by certain actors who, like, in my opinion, like the greatest Hamlet ever. And it got me thinking about, you know, if Shakespeare could only see this, he'd be so delighted. And then that kind of led me to think of, does Shiva or Brahman feel that about us? Does he, are there certain beings he's like, they're playing their role? So I guess that's some, my question is something to do with being identified with form. When is it bad, and when is it like the playwright who's thrilled that his character is living out its Chaitra, for instance? Like when, I understand, well, I feel like your answer is always at the highest non-duality, but you do often talk about, in the sense of like, no form, nothing exists. But when you often talk about God as the playwright, that's kind of where I resonate with, and the idea of living out your best life, your best, like, what, yeah, the most goodness, that's kind of where I that's what resonates with me. So I'm trying to understand how, I don't know where I'm at. Maybe you could help me.
Okay, I'll try. First of all, how you started, that you were triggered and felt that you were being told off and felt guilty, that's your projection. There, none of that was intended whatsoever. I was simply describing what's called the Anava Mala, right? Where there are three malas, right? And mala means impurity, and our goal is to become near mala or vimala, beyond all impurities. But what does it mean to say it's impure? It's not a moral castigation. It means that your true nature is obscured, okay? Mm-hmm. So then we have to ask, what is your true nature? And in fact, there is no difference between, in this case, using your metaphor, Shakespeare, the Hamlet play, and Hamlet as a character within the play. All of that is part of the intelligence that is Shakespeare himself, or itself, if you will, right? Where did Shakespeare get his intelligence from? That also was the will of God delivering that inspiration. And Shakespeare took dictation, and he would admit that, and even says as much in his sonnets. So there's a reception of that information in which there is indeed non-duality between the playwright, the play, and the character, and the actor of the character. But what's important, if the actor is going to play the character accurately, the actor must know he or she is not the character, right? If the actor actually believes he's Hamlet, and he thinks that when he's off stage as well as on, he's a bit psychotic, and his Hamlet will not be accurate to Shakespeare, but will become his own imaginary interpretation. So it is only when there is an appreciation for that supreme intelligence that is the creative power that is unfolding as your character, that you can play that character with perfection. And you play it with perfection because you realize you are formless awareness that is the receptacle of the infinite intelligence that is being funneled into the body and becoming embodied. But what becomes embodied is still bodiless presence. And form is just an appearance within the formless. The whole cosmos is an appearance within the eternal presence that is formless and beyond space and time. It's an appearance within that in which certain truths can be symbolically unfolded and manifested very dramatically by the apparent characters who enact the unfoldment of, we could say, a mystery play, a morality play, a tragicomedy, all of the various idioms of human dramas are combined in this fabulous masterpiece that is beyond the capacity even of a Shakespeare or of an infinite number of Shakespeares. Like monkeys typing on the typewriter could never type out God's script, which is filled with unprecedented and unpredictable surprises and beauty and joy to the point of it being unimaginable and even inconceivable to the mind of a character who is an appearance within it. It's that totality of the significance of the drama that we are also to play as the audience of the drama. That's the level of the mirror in which the appearances are the images that appear, and that's where the play appears. But when you remain in that detached and perfect state of fulfillment and completion, then you are in a state of both patience and poise. And in every moment, your response to any event that is occurring will be one of total accuracy, beauty, goodness, compassion, purity, love, and empowerment. And that wisdom that manifests through your presence and your being then has a knock-on effect on the entire energy field and fills all the players with the inspiration of the true essence of their role in its perfection when every being is manifest in their true nature as God consciousness. And then the play itself shifts from a scene in Kali Yuga to a scene in Satyuga, in a kingdom of heaven. The play enters a new act in which the culmination of all of the yearning and striving of the human spirit for freedom and for beauty and for the unfoldment of our latent powers of miraculous manifestation all become realized. And it is this moment in which the fulfillment of both the playwright's intention and the character and the actor's fulfillment as the completion of the journey through time and space as that heroic player who is able to create and manifest a character worthy of the imagination and beauty of the mind of God and the heart of God. And that is the role that we are assigned to play. And so that perfection is your natural state if your ego will not get triggered by projections and sanskaras. And then the enactment will always be in accord with the Tao and in perfect alignment with the will of God.
No words.
Thank you, Shunya. Does that work? Here we go. So I'm not really sure what my question is, but I'm sure it's going to unfold as I share. So most of my life has been led by not a whole lot of discipline, structure, mechanics, and there's been a lot of reactivity to lower vibration, desires, behaviors, impatient compulsivity, and it's what I'm attuned to, and this is a story. I know my ego is telling me this is a story, so I can witness it right now as I'm sharing with you, and it's real because it's been in my experience that I've been attuned to this type of action, so to speak, and this up and down roller coaster, high, high, low, low, nothing really in between, not a whole lot of balance and stillness. Mm-hmm. And
let me just interrupt you there. What you're describing is almost every ego today. Don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you. But you see, you call it real. That part of the narrative is false. It's a character enacting a certain script. And that script was, in a way, forced on you in early childhood and even in past lives to enforce your being born into a certain kind of family system with certain types of karmic events that would produce those effects. That's the nature of the Kali Yuga, the final act of this world drama. And what you must understand is that as you recognize these traits of the character, it also enables you to distance yourself from them and see that they were just habit patterns, and that at any moment you can choose to be who you really are, even though your ego has no clue who you really are. But in the stillness of pure presence, in which you're able to detach from that apparatus that of mental chatter and activity of a chaotic nature, then that stillness supervenes and embodies itself in a very relaxed and focused and disciplined and naturally ordered embodiment of supreme intelligence. That is when you will truly feel real.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think that was the question that I was leading into is, what is on the other side?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're...
You are on the other side,
right.
The real you.
Right.
And now it's time for the real you not to be obscured by this character facade that you've been enacting. And so the point of all of that is not that it was a bad thing or, you know, your life has been awful. No. What you've been given is information that you will now be able to turn into wisdom that will enable you to function as a healer for all those other beings who are in the same chaotic state with the same kind of story that you have, and they will come to you for help, and you will be able to free them of the belief that they are that chaotic mental apparatus, and they can delete the program just as you are about to do and recognize the true freedom of consciousness. And then you can bring that gift to every soul, and that will be the fulfillment of your own journey and your own then freedom from karma and graduation from this level of the plane of being into the absolute level of the real.
Thank you. I think as I was walking up here, I was like, I need encouragement. And there it is. Yeah, the other
you
side.
You always get what you need.
Always. Yeah, thank you, Shunya.
But you may not get what you want.
That's for sure. It's been a lot of that.
I was aware of the striving of the ego structure, the programming that it's always hard work and that whatever I need to become, I have to work hard for.
That's the carrot in front of the horse. Yeah. It'll never catch it.
And then I thought, maybe it's so much simpler than that. And that if I actually do have within me the need to find out who I am, I must know.
Of course you do. As soon as you stop striving and stop asking the questions and stop maintaining a narrative of I've got to find out, that I, you realize, is false. You are already that which is the real self. You couldn't ever be anything else. There is nothing but the real consciousness, even though you have the freedom to produce illusory characters and traits and feelings, but the real always underlies it, and the real is what you are, and as soon as there is stillness and presence, it is fully revealed, and then the freedom to dissolve those past traits and all the strivings. You realize you're already complete. There's nothing to strive for, and there's no one even to strive for it.
Hallelujah.
It's very simple, my question, and I kind of intellectually I know, but where I get stuck is when I have an opening, like last night we had beautiful kirtans, then then there's like a backlash, and but it's not like I have a lot of thoughts and stuff. It's like I go into a deer in the headlights, and I can't sleep, but I can be like hours just lying there, and I don't have any thoughts because something has just frozen. Something's frozen. So it's kind of the opposite of what I want. You want to have no thoughts, but you don't want to have a frozen stuckness. So I just want a tip. Because I think, I mean, my mind knows that I'm just watching this little ego going through this drama and that it will pass. But that doesn't help the hours that I'm stuck in that state. So I want to know if you have a tip.
Well, what do you mean by frozen? Elaborate that more.
Well, I go to bed because I want to be able to get up for that, because my favorite meditation is the 4 o'clock one. So so I start around 8 o'clock. And then 8:30, 9, 10. And then what calms me down is I can listen to you on YouTube or whatever. And that makes me feel not
okay.
Let
me stop you then. Yeah. Going back to the deer in the headlights. When a deer is frozen in the headlights, it's terrified, right? So what you're describing is terror or dread, right? That's what's frozen.
Yeah.
It's not just a frozen silence and stillness. It's a frozen feeling of fear. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay.
There's no thoughts, so I can't really track it that well, but it's that that kind of feeling.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any sense that that kind of fear was imposed on you in the form of a trauma early in life?
Yeah, my mother disappeared the day I was born, practically, yeah.
Okay. So that's what you're feeling. Not a deer in the headlights, but a baby feeling abandoned and who can't yet use language, therefore can't think. And that baby is terrified that it's going to die, right? So it's that fear. Now, if you can watch that fear from a place of pure presence, you will also realize that you as presence have never been born. Presence isn't born. The baby is an identification already with a bodily organism. And that organism, because it's born helpless and needy and is terrified of abandonment that has now happened, that baby cannot do anything. And it can't even scream because there's no one even to call. And it has just shrunken into a state of dread of death, right? But since presence cannot die, cannot be hurt, and has no need for anyone, not mommy, not daddy, not anyone, and all that is real is in you and is what you are, and that presence is fully empowered to be fearless, because fear can't stick to presence. It can stick to a thinking apparatus or a sense of being an individual bodily being. But that's an illusory sanskara, a leftover trait from that past trauma that was so, it so interrupted the flow of your ability to grow that it remained frozen in time, and it becomes the fallback position of your ego, that whenever things seem good, suddenly the dread that mommy will disappear, whether mommy's in the form of kirtan or a loving community or a sense of things going well, that dread always appears as a kind of alarm system that never turns off. And so there's always a backlash to feeling good, because you felt very good as a newborn infant, and then suddenly terror and everything stopped. But if you can be in that state of pure presence and saturate that dread that's still there as an infantile self-image, saturate it with love and with compassion, that emerges from your natural presence, then you will be able to dissolve it, and that frozenness will then become stillness, but without any fear, just with the absence of ego and the presence of light and love and joy and empowerment that doesn't have to do anything or change in any way, but can never be abandoned, never be hurt. And it's that natural state of your true being that is eternal presence that then is victorious over and dissolves all of these glitches.
Yeah, that's, I like when I'm in that state, I'm like, yeah, I can, my mind always works. Even like, it's not like it's thinking, it's just like, I've got to get to that place where I can see or observe from that more higher perspective.
Yes.
So.
But even that narrative of I've got to get, let that go. And just ask the one question, who am I who is perceiving it? And let the attention go inward to the source of your ability to perceive. And that source is always in stillness and freedom. And then that will become embodied. But the self-image of the infant cannot let go of it. It doesn't have the power to do it. But your real self has the power to dissolve that incipient ego that became traumatized and unable to move or to open to its own potentialities and remained like a closed seed that could never sprout.
So the question is, who am I to who perceives?
That's right.
Okay, that's what I wanted is the
good
question. Thank you.
When you reach that one who is the perceiver, you will realize there is only one I, and that every being who is conscious shares the same I. There's only one self. That one self is appearing as the many. You are one of the many, but as the one of the many, you are the one of the absolute. And that is what must now be fully embodied by letting go of all the ego narratives, all of its beliefs, and then the fullness of your power as pure spirit will be revealed and actualized.
Yeah, it's interesting being here where I really get the two opposites because things are so sattvic generally. But then I get these blowbacks, and they're brutal. So I'm sticking it out, though.
Saturate the blowback with the light and the love of the self, and it won't happen again.
Mm-hmm. Namaste. Thank you.
Since Wednesday night, I've been thinking a lot about the unwavering mind, and I've been trying to define it in a way of what does it mean. And when I think about it, it kind of brings up frustration in a way of I can't define it, and so.
Why do you want to define it?
Well,
the self is undefinable. How can you define the infinite? Infinite and definite are opposite terms. That you cannot define that which is unmanifest. It has no qualities. It's just pure potency. That's as much of a definition as you can have. It's inconceivable, vast, creative intelligence. And if you try to define it with the tiny ego mind, which is one sliver of 1/1% of the infinite consciousness that you really are, then you'll never be able to do it. because the ego is not intelligent enough to comprehend the absolute self. What you need to do, not define, but surrender. If you surrender to the unwavering presence that underlies the chattering mind trying to define everything, if you'll surrender that and the striving to define as part of the surrender, surrender all of your thoughts, your wishes, your whole heart and your love, and give that totally to the infinite presence that underlies your consciousness, then you will become the unwavering mind, and there won't be any need to define it. You will realize it. That's what you want, not definition, because that's just still an abstraction. You want the fullness of the real. That's where the bliss is. So let go of defining and simply enter through surrender into full absorption into the unwavering presence.
Okay, that helps. Then I guess on a daily basis, when you see your mind wavering, I guess you're talking about the ultimate. And then what about the
once you reach the unwavering presence, it never changes. There's no more daily I have to return and remember it. No, it's unchanging. It's eternal presence. It's the eternal light of God. That light is lit. And once that light is lit, then there is no longer any ego who is worried about trying to define or to do anything. All unfolds as the will of God. There is no intermediary any longer to worry about what should I do or not. All of that disappears.
So how do you get to that point where...
You're already there if you'll stop asking those questions. Okay. It's the tendency to ask questions and to continue a narrative of wanting a definition or wanting some magic words or something. Let go of all of that. Enjoy silence itself. That's where the bliss is. Stay in the presence, and you'll feel an intensity of power filling your consciousness. Let it fill up completely. That's how your battery of your soul is fully recharged. And that's what enables you to transcend this plane of illusion.
Thank you.
Arusha.
Okay, this one's from Anuradha. So she says, dovetailing from the previous gentleman's question.
A little bit louder, please.
Yeah. There is a considerable lack of structure, discipline, and struggle from the external environment that is the mirror here in the local space. There's been so much effort to stay present and accept things as they are, to keep remembering that this is part of the self-image and not real. I struggle to ask from the characters in the environment to be more mindful at late at night when they are most awake, and because I know that I can't resolve this from the outside. Can you please help me to shift to that stillness without having to get up and leave as anger surges and humility grows and the prayers start streaming down in tears? This is torture. I know I'm no longer helpless and powerless. However, these are the forces that keep me from taking control. How do I regain this control back to the goddess in charge and not the lower drives? I'm deeply grateful for all of your presence lately and this powerful leveraging out of the unreal.
First of all, they are not forces. There's only one force, and that's the power of the real self. It's by misidentifying with the bodily vehicle that then holds the past self-images that go back to birth and the anger that appeared at birth at, again, the event of abandonment that then snowballed into fury and confusion and lack
and many other negative emotions in a brew that has remained stagnant in your consciousness, but that you have continually revivified and given life to, even though it's just a program. It has no reality to it whatsoever. And if you realize that the world that appears to you is a dream, and when you see the world through that self-image from the past, then the dream becomes its projections, and it becomes a nightmare full of people that you're angry at and that you feel are destroying the environment and your peace, etc., and you want to flee. But you cannot run away from yourself. And the dream will haunt you wherever you go and turn any environment into another nightmare scenario of the same kind. And what you have to realize is this is all internal to you. It has nothing to do with others or your environment. It has only to do with your stillness, in which that snowball of negative feelings will be able to dissolve in pure presence that is filled with light and love and peace. And once the sanskara of that ego complex has been completely dissolved, there will be no trace of these tendencies any longer, and you will be able to live in a beautiful divine consciousness that is the manifestation of who you really are. And so you need also, as I told to Amrita, simply surrender. But you have to surrender your mind, your heart, your body, your life, everything to God, to that supreme power of goodness, benevolence, intelligence, wisdom, love, and joy. And let that being fully embody the God self in your present vehicle and become the nature of the character that you are playing in this realm of illusion. Turning all of the pain into wisdom will also transform you and your character into a being of great wisdom and healing power. That is your highest destiny and what you must choose, not running away from any immediate situation, but withdrawing into your inmost presence untouched by that anger, and then bringing the power of peace to fill, saturate your entire consciousness. And then you will know what freedom really is.
My question is about impossibility. And you mentioned in our last retreat, you mentioned Lacan defining the real as trauma or impossibility. And you went off to explain that the impossibility is precisely the trait of the real that we're interested in. And it comes from grace. So I want to link that understanding of impossibility in the way you defined it in the retreat with one of my favorite quotes, something you said many, many years ago, which is, love is what makes the impossible inevitable. And so I wanted to ask you if you could please explain under this new, let's say, or this continuation of your teachings, how that can be applied today. How can we apply that to our everyday life in order to be in the real, which is the impossible, filled with grace, as you explained it?
First of all, what's important to understand is possibility is a concept, right? And what your ego considers to be possible is conditioned by what you have learned. And you will have learned that scientifically certain things are possible and others are not. You know, a certain kind of lizard can regrow a tail, but if you lose an arm, you're not going to regrow it. It's not possible, right? There are certain laws of nature. There are certain limitations of lifespan. There are certain conditions of apparent reality that are barriers to any kinds of action or events that go beyond or outside of the event horizon of the apparent rules of the game, whether it's laws of nature or psychology or metaphysics, whatever your belief system is, right? So once you understand that possibility itself is an artificial construct and that impossibility is simply unlimited freedom, that's what is really meant by that. But whose freedom is it? It's the freedom of the infinite consciousness that manifests as the cosmos. And that infinite consciousness is also the real I within you and within everyone. But when you are fully attuned to being the infinite consciousness, then what appears to you will be the manifestation of the freedom of that consciousness to manifest as truth and beauty. From the level of God consciousness, in which the truth is all is possible, right? There are no limits to what God can manifest, right? And that makes the miraculous the norm, you see? And so then that level of being is completely free of any conceptual limitation on what possibility is. So it's not so much that you move from possibility to impossibility, as both of those concepts, which are simply opposites, annihilate each other, and the real that is already inconceivable is what manifests as the dream of life that unfolds as the perfection of the consciousness of God that manifests through you, and as you will perceive in that state through every being, because everything is conscious, everything is alive, everything is filled with the freedom to manifest in unprecedented and unpredictable ways.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And so, what role does love play in this impossibility, in this, let's say, freedom, now not using the word impossibility, in realizing this infinite freedom?
Well, it's God's love, and it's God's love of freedom and of manifesting the miraculous, because that is what will fulfill all of those who are seeking the proof of the reality of God, right? This is why the Gospels contain miracles. That's the proof that Jesus really was the Son of God, etc. And you have miracle stories in every tradition. Some of these stories are symbolic metaphors. Some are actual historic events. But the capacity for that kind of unfoldment of magic is the inherent latent potentiality of every consciousness that appears within the manifold. Everyone has that ability, but that freedom has atrophied because of a limited belief in what is possible. That's the impurity I was talking to you about. If you believe you are just a bodily character, then your possibilities are limited by the body. But you don't know what consciousness can actually achieve when it is freed from any limiting beliefs. And so it's the impurity of limiting beliefs that is the key to realizing your freedom, okay? And then when you have cleared the field of all limitations on what could emerge in the dream field, then you have authorized that freedom to manifest in the form of absolute beauty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question from Solveig. Thank you for this DIY evening. One of your recent essays was about euthanizing the world. I wonder what your thoughts are on euthanasia in general. Do you think it is better for the karma and the Atman to let God decide the moment of dying?
Well, God always does decide. So even if it seems like there is human intervention, which of course now is happening massively. I mean, we're in a time of mass death. And I wouldn't call those who die from, let's say, taking poisonous injections or being hit by bombs in a war zone or assassination attempts or achievements or any other form of sudden death as euthanasia necessarily. But all of the karma of all of the beings who are within the dream field are actually dreaming their own life and their own death. And they are dreaming their death because they believe they are mortal. When you realize you are immortal spirit, then it's irrelevant whether the body is alive or dead because you have never actually been in a body. The bodies are within your consciousness, but the consciousness is never touched by death. And it is never arisen into some biological life form and then has to leave it. That's all an illusion. That is something that will appear to be the case for an ego complex that can have a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience, etc. But the consciousness itself is always forever bodiless and boundless. And when you are in that state, you will realize that this question of euthanasia is not really a valid question because no one lives or dies, because there is no one but the oneself. That's the reality. And when you're in that non-duality, then there's no more sentimentality or fear or worry or a need to create some policy toward euthanasia, whether it's toward abortion or whether it's toward some other form of depopulation. All will unfold according to the will of God, but that will bring every node of consciousness back into the supernal light and bliss and freedom from suffering. And it's that is God's benevolence. So that apparent euthanasia, even if it's a violent death, the moment that the ego is free from the bodily projected pain or suffering of whatever kind, there's an immediate realization that none of that actually really happened. It was all just within a holographic film that one mistakenly identified with, but nothing actually happened at all. There is only light, and that light is eternal beauty and love and bliss, and there is no suffering whatsoever. It's that state that when you are in it, you will be able to emanate that so that everyone is touched and saturated by that same realization.
Okay. another from Alan. She says that she's incredibly grateful and asks, so is the source allowed to express gratitude without getting confused with the illusory I? How do I stay honest in all things?
Well, gratitude is our natural state. It's the state of grace. And so, yes, so long as there is an embodied character that seems to exist in duality, it has to be in a state of gratitude and adoration of the source in order to sustain the union of non-duality and duality as a non-dual whole. And in that state, then, everything happens without thinking about it or figuring it out. There's simply a spontaneous movement of benevolence and a compassion that frees others from any attachment or demand that your ego might have. When your ego disappears, then your freedom is also recognized as the freedom of every being to unfold their full potentiality. And everyone receives divine permission to let go of their belief in limitation. And that's the function of the yogi, to fill the morphogenic field with that power of total presence. Any last question? Okay. How many found this evening helpful? Yes? Good, I'm glad. Even if it hasn't been immediately helpful, you'll find that seeds have been planted that will sprout into a greater awareness of the underlying unwavering presence that is the foundation of your conscious being, and that will evermore saturate the mental apparatus and slow it down until there is silence and freedom from images and thoughts and memories and symptoms of suffering of whatever kind. And there will be then simply the emanation of the light of pure, supreme, conscious power that enables the release of all of those limiting vibrational frequencies and the sublimation of the power of presence to be emanated into the fullness of the space in which the universe appears in our consciousness. And the way that it will manifest its appearance then will conform with that supreme power of truth and beauty. And this is how the cycle of time then moves from one yuga to another. And this is the moment in which the transition from Kali Yuga to Sat Yuga is happening through the realization of truth by ever more nodes of consciousness within the network until there's a unified energy field of divine light and love that then saturates all beings and brings about the ultimate return to the God Self by all beings. So we are seeing the exhaustion of the pravriti wave, the wave of the expansion into time and space. And now there's the exhaustion of that and the strengthening of the nivritti wave of returning to the emptiness and the silence and the stillness of eternal presence. And this will reach culmination in the world itself being washed by waves of light until there is only light without form and only presence of infinite potentiality. Blessings to all of you for realizing that you are a manifestation of the one miraculous self who is embodied in all. Namaste.
Namaste.